If someone sees you with love and sees you with possibility, you never forget that you're loved. And there are times when Linda looks at me that I feel so utterly and completely loved. And I hope she knows that back at her.
Le collectif Leg et Espace Perrault Transmission Chorégraphique présente Un morceau de chocolat avec Linda. Une série de discussions autour du leg pédagogique et artistique de Linda Rabin.
Hello, I am Lucie Boissineau. It is November 22nd, 2024. Today, I am hosting a meeting between Linda Rabin and Margie Gillis. This is as part of a collection of testimonies regarding the transmission, the educational and artistic legacy of Linda Rabin. So here it is. A piece of chocolate with Linda. Greetings to you two.
Hi.
Delighted to be in your precious company.
Very happy to be here.
Thank you, Margie.
Hi, Margie.
Hi, Linda. Hey, Linda.
Margie, I know well that a priori the world of dance is not part of a SARS system. And even more so in the world of contemporary dance. But you have become a star, adored by many. You have been decorated with several honors over the years. Linda and you go a long way. Your relationship is multi-layered. Teacher-apprentice, choreographer-interpreter, co-creators, coach, supporter, mutual inspiration, and ultimately, friends. I would like to know more about the special bond that unites you and Linda. When did you meet, and in which context?
It was in Vancouver in 1975, and I went to a class that Linda was teaching at it was at the university
at UBC.
Yeah, it was a big
the ballroom.
Yeah,
the
it was a really beautiful room, and I went in, and she was teaching Le Mans technique, and I just loved it. I loved Le Mans. When I had gone to New York to see my brother dance, he had been in the Le Mans company, and I'm pretty sure I had seen him dance first. And when I saw what he was doing, I was so excited about Le Mans because it was what I was. It had a circular reflection about it that matched what I felt about movement. And so then there I was in Linda's class, and it was just really exciting. Linda was beautiful. She was gorgeous. She was wise. She would say these things would pop out of her mouth that just were glorious. Her prompts, the way she guided you. And still, there's nothing quite like being in one of Linda's classes and being surrounded by her her energy, the spaciousness she gives you, but also the support, the underlying support. I mean, sometimes things are not verbal. Sometimes things are just the presence of somebody expecting you to be beautiful. And your soul kind of feels that and rises to it and comes to a vision that they're holding. And especially with dance, where we learn how to read another person through physicality, through sensitivity, through spirituality. And I just felt very complete and happy in her class. And then, lo and behold, she praised me. And that felt really wonderful. Because going across the room, traveling, once we particularly once we started to travel, because I'm pigeon-toed, or I was very pigeon-toed mm-hmm, back then. Mm-hmm. Now a little less so, but still was pigeon-toed. So my technique was anything but stellar. And yet when I moved, I could dance. I could dance. So it was the same problem when I would go to New York and be in the Graham School. They didn't know where to put me because I couldn't do any of the exercises, but I could do the dance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go figure. So anyway, so Linda and it just was exciting. It was exciting to be with Linda. It was exciting to be around her. It was exciting to have her as a teacher. Mm-hmm. And we ran into each other on the street in Montreal after that. And where I was from, she was from. And we started talking about just sort of...
Well, what happened... First of all, I want to go back to the class at UBC. I remember you screwing up your face into these contortions, trying to do those exercises that were done standing centered, and like you said, you know, your legs couldn't turn out, you couldn't do any of that stuff. But the minute we went across the floor, you just flew in the space. You, I've said this to you, I've described it many times before, but you would drop down to the floor, rise up, leap into the air, and I remember stopping the class and saying to everybody, did you see that? Mm-hmm. Now that's what I call dancing. And I'll never forget that moment.
Wow.
That was very special. I remember what you wore.
Yeah, I remember what I was wearing too. We've gone over it so much.
Yeah.
Also, I loved the way you dressed, right? You were in leotards though at that class.
It's but possible.
When you put on your other clothing,
your
Indian clothing, I was so impressed with Linda's world.
But what happened was in sometime in 1976, I was walking up Saint Laurent Boulevard. And you were walking down, and I went, Margie, like it was a surprise, a shock to see each other. And I was at that time preparing in my mind to start working on a piece, The White Goddess. And I asked you, I said, are you available? Would you like to participate? And you said yes. So that led into our next working together.
Yeah. It did. And I was very much on my own trajectory, working out what kind of movement I liked and creating movement out of a philosophical base and a psychological base, and then seeing what the architecture arrived at in the body from those philosophical vantage points about communication and about spirit and who we are and what we do and how we love and male and female and those identities. And then I arrived to start the workshop with Linda, and it was just heaven. Mm-hmm. It was like everything that I was feeling inside of me and struggling with on my own suddenly had a name. Mm-hmm. And suddenly had a place and suddenly had a whole sort of language around it, the feminine consciousness and spirituality and movement and rhythm. And it was just phenomenal being in that group.
Yes.
And we formed very, very tightly.
Strong bonds.
Very, very strong bonds during that time. The work was very vulnerable. It was very intimate. Linda was asking us to reveal things, and in her capable energy, out they came. Everything came out. You just gave Linda, you could see it and hear it and feel it and know it. And it just reinforced everything I was searching for.
At the moment.
Uh-huh. And I loved doing the piece. I loved the costumes. I loved the music. I loved the piece. I loved dancing with everyone. I loved the fact that we were moving through different spaces, I was certainly aware of the time, at the time of Peter Brooks and that kind of
wow.
thing, but I didn't know what those things really were to that extent. I think I saw my first production of Peter Brooks' Trojan Women was at La Mama in New York.
That was
later.
André Serban.
André Serban. Right, Peter Brooks, André Serban,
but it's in
Grotowski,
the same
the
similar
whole,
vein.
Yeah, the yeah. whole the, that whole thing. Is she gonna fall? Is she gonna fall? Oh my God, she fell! You know, there's just that sort of cellular commitment, where you just feel the space between the movements, and you feel the story behind it, and you feel the energy behind it, and you feel. Purpose and beauty and love and transformation, and it's really getting at the heart of who we are as human beings, and to be getting at the heart of who we were as human beings as women at that time was just so reinforcing. You know, I mean, still in my family, I often go to dinners and. The women are in the kitchen cooking and they don't want me because I don't cook on a regular basis. The young women are with their babies in one room, and then the men are in another room watching sports on TV, and I stand in the middle and watch all of this happening and have no real sense of place. Mm. And it was always kind of, in a way, I just never felt like I belonged in those worlds. In Linda's world, I belonged.
White goddess.
That was my world. Mm-hmm. That was what I saw. That was my family. That mm-hmm. was my truth. That was my, and I got to, we got to work with Annie Skinner, which was incredible. And
What was that?
And Ann Skinner and Richard Pachenko together set up what was called the Theater Resource Center. And it was started in 1975 and based in Ottawa. It basically exploded 1 year later.
Okay.
but then eventually continued in another format in Toronto. And Richard Pachenko's exercises and explorations were the basis of how we developed the work in The White Goddess. And it also became the basis of what Candace Loubert and I developed for Recherche Créative.
I see.
At the school at LADMI. And Ann Skinner was the voice person. So, for example, in The White Goddess, we would internalize the name of a goddess or the cranes. We would take the word, let's say cranes. I don't remember what we did at that point, but the cranes, yes, we did. We internalized cranes and the sound of the word and going... There's a whole process for internalizing to get the life essence of what's inherent in the word. So you're not going for the intellectual meaning, but for the felt sense that emerges out of the sounds of the words. So that became part of the process we worked with. And that was thanks to Ann Skinner.
That was just heaven to me. Just heaven. So one of the exercises we took the All Saints Revile Her, and the echo was in it. There was the line with echo in it. Sister of the Mirage and echo.
Yeah.
And Linda and Anne went around and gave a word to each person, whispered in their ears, and nobody else knew what the sentence was or what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all got up and improvised together. And it was crazy because Echo kept trying to echo people, was trying to walk around with other people. And Mirage was like, go away. I have no substance. I can't deal with you. And it was just, it was remarkable how
And it
clearly,
was very, very avant-garde. Huh?
Yeah, and very clear essence. Very clear essence, very readable, very understandable. It was perfect. Oh, it was just such a thrill.
Yeah, we internalized the colors.
Yep.
Like the black, the white, and the red.
Yeah.
I remember that now from, I think, of the goddesses' colors with life, birth, life and death, that kind of metaphor.
And for years, yeah. I still sing the song before performances. That and Jacques Brel. Si on a que l'amour. And then I sing The White Goddess.
Wow. So yeah. It stayed with you all these
years. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I could tell you everything we did, who we were doing it, who was where was we were going, when we moved, what the song was. Yeah, it was wonderful. We had to do a trio where we couldn't see each other. And we were wearing bells, so we had to move very quickly with each other. The movement was very abrupt, quick lightning, quick movement. But we were not, we were in going in different directions. We were cranes. And years later, we would see each other in the street, the three of us, and exactly, we would move exactly, identically.
Wow.
For years and years and years. I don't see those people anymore, but so they're still there.
That was kind of a cornerstone for you.
Huge. Yeah. Huge. To realize that you had a tribe, that you had a wise woman, that you had that everything that was there for you, that you were imagining on your own and trying to create, was available and accessible and had language.
It's extraordinary.
Oh, it was really extraordinary.
I remember you telling me the story, which I never knew, but only through what you told me, that you would lie on the floor and peek underneath the door to watch rehearsal with me and Candace.
Yes.
You want to say something as to why?
Well, because it was very powerful. It was incredible. It was, and also she was the goddess, and she was, and of course Linda was obviously the head goddess.
Mm-hmm. No way.
Yeah, well, from our perspective, right? Seriously, from our perspective, you would say jump off a cliff. I would have gone off a cliff for you.
Well, oh dear.
No problem. No problem. No, but it wasn't negative. It wasn't negative. Yeah. I know you would not jump me off a bad cliff, you know. There'd be water underneath. I would swim. It would be fine. But I just, yeah, so to see any little bit, even if you're only looking at the feet of Candace and when Linda was coaching her, just to see her feet move, you could see the concept all the way, just in sections of the body through. It was thrilling stuff. It was really thrilling stuff. And I could not get enough. I was just... I had had a very bad nervous breakdown when I was a kid. And coming out of the nervous breakdown, I had this whole set of philosophies I wanted to live. And here I was being told I could live them, and I was wanted for the qualities I had. And it was really reinforcing. And it became solid ground for the rest of my life. It still is.
Yes, that's what I sense. Mm-hmm. And it followed you in the creation of your different solos, because you did very many creations on yourself. Linda stayed with you. Was she a coach at times?
Not really. No, it was we were doing some parallel work. Linda had choreographed a piece on me.
Yes,
a premonition. We saw each other in Japan after the White Goddess. And we're working on stuff. I took class with her for many years. Mm-hmm. Certainly took class. And as her classes evolved, less Limon and more Linda structured. And then she went into doing her work with Bainbridge and then with Continuum and all of those things. So then we started just sort of living parallel. In 81, I started the Margie Gillis Dance Foundation with Jack, and Linda was on the board. So Linda has been on the board since the beginning. Mm-hmm. So she's always been a person that I've come to for advice about life, about art, about things, but it wasn't an in-the-room kind of thing. Mm-hmm. She was busy with the school. I was busy with my stuff.
I would say that from the very beginning, there was nothing that I had as a teacher to offer you. It was more that I was traveling parallel with you, accompanying you on your path, because you had it all within your own self. You were cultivating your own path. But somehow what I was interested in, what I was doing, corresponded with what interested you.